I mean, yeah, they're going to also try to attack Bitcoin's fungibility, and they will ensure that any kind of licensed, or it's likely that certain governments will ensure that like licensed businesses won't be able to accept coins that like tick certain red flags. And like having worked in cross-border payments for quite a long time, and then also like KitCoin with an exchange, you kind of come into contact with a lot of these regulations, and like compliance is a massive headache because you're basically deputized by the government to become an enforcer. You become one of their agents in terms of like enforcing whatever crazy policies that they decide, and it gets in the way of doing business. It's also a lot of hassle, but also there's kind of like moral and ethical implications there because you may be kind of enforcing things that, or it's very likely that you're enforcing things that like restrict people from using the financial system. So like if somebody comes from a specific country, regardless of their background, regardless of their history, like how good a person they are, maybe they're now living in another country. If they come from like a certain country, immediate like red flag, they can't use your cross-border payment service. And it's like, certainly in those kind of scenarios, if for instance, a very large country totally blocked and banned Bitcoin connections, it would be possible to still operate a Bitcoin node in a kind of disaster scenario using a Blockstream satellite node. So yeah, it definitely helps. And then with the addition of Locomesh and GoTenor and various other, like for example, Ham Radio, you can really start to construct an alternative network that doesn't rely on any internet.
How are you all doing? This is Kevan Davani. I'm the host of the Talk Bitcoin podcast show. Really excited to have Neil Woodfine, the marketing director of Blockstream, back on my show. Seen him last time in Vietnam on a Bitcoin conference. So he's got really fascinating insights and, you know, opinions and perspectives, comprehension of what's going on. So we're going to talk about a range of topics. We're going to talk about Russia, Spain, the Financial Action Task Force. We're going to talk about Europol. We're going to talk about central bank digital currencies, starting China, you know, handing out centralized digital bank currencies. And also we're going to talk about European central banks, the clampdown and the war that's been staged and waged by governments, regulators on Bitcoin privacy and Bitcoin self-custody. So yeah, don't forget to subscribe to my channel, please. And if you loved our episode afterwards, let me know your question. My email address is hello@thetotalconnect.com. Please leave a positive 5-star review if you loved it. And don't forget, please do subscribe on my different podcast platforms and on my YouTube channel. Follow me on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, Telegram, what have you. So thank you so much again for your support. And here you go. Hey, welcome to the Total Bitcoin Podcast Show. My name is Kevan Davani. My very special guest back again on my show is Neil Woodfine, the marketing director of Blockstream. Neil, how are you doing? It's been a long time since we haven't heard one or another.
Hi, Kevan. Nice to see you as well. It's good to be on the show again. I think we saw each other earlier in the year, just before all the Corona stuff started kicking off in Vietnam.
In Vietnam.
So, yeah, that was good. That was good timing.
Yeah, it was a fun time. So, Neil, I'm really curious because you have such critical insights and comprehension of what's going on around the world. And I mean, the officially pre-announced topic of this episode is the waging of the war by governments and regulators around the world against Bitcoin privacy and Bitcoin, self-custody. But, it seems there is a much, much bigger picture going on. And I would like to listen to your position, to your, views and perception, what's going on. Because when I see and reading all this stuff about, you know, the central bank digital currency in China, people are now seemingly begging for, you know, for a handout. The World Economic Forum conflating COVID-19 with climate change, also known as so-called global warming. You know, this whole leftist, what can I call it? I mean, I'm just going to call it as it is. It's we're going into this fascist dictatorial, system where it seems everything that's going on also because of this, you know, hyper propagated COVID-19 thing from Austria, where I'm living, you know, with all the measures that I've taken, whether it be masks wearing or lockdowns, whatever. What is your perception right now? I mean, in terms of where are we going? In, when it comes to the direction of where are we going?
So obviously, I've been beating the drum since like February, March, about kind of the exaggeration of the threat from coronavirus or COVID or whatever you want to call it. And I expected a lot of kind of dangerous policies to be implemented, but I think I never imagined how long they would go on for and like the lengths that they would be taken to. So I think like my biggest takeaway from this is that like in a Bitcoin context, it's very difficult to predict how things will turn out and how things will unfold in the future. There's a lot of potential futures that we can't even imagine can happen, but can happen if certain people get their way. So like, I'm from the UK, and I think the UK has been one of the worst in terms of the controls on the population, the worst with like lockdowns and mask mandates and kind of changing the rules on a weekly and even daily basis sometimes, which kind of keeps everybody second guessing and unable to plan. I have a pretty negative but pessimistic view of the way things are going. I mean, Australia is worse, but like I can't think of many other places that are worse than the UK. Now I'm based in Asia, so I have like kind of a more international perspective with how various different regions are handling the disease. And for example, where I am in Thailand, it was taken seriously very late, and it was only taken seriously for about a month. And during that period, like businesses were closed, but people could still go out. Like they weren't like told to stay at home, aside from a 10 p.m. curfew, which obviously doesn't make any sense, but fine. There's like a 10 p.m. curfew. Compared to other regions, that's like, I'll take that. But like outside of that month, both before and after, just everything's been super relaxed. I mean, people are forced to wear masks in air-conditioned locations like malls and 7-Elevens. But even that is pretty much only strictly enforced in Bangkok. In Chiang Mai, it's been extremely relaxed. And there isn't any like mass deaths or like crazy like bursts in cases. And like anywhere we look around the world that hasn't locked down, they're also totally fine. Maybe like this threat of kind of government lockdowns and clampdowns and stuff only applies to kind of developed Western European countries and maybe parts of the USA. Like maybe we don't have to worry, like maybe there are going to be lots of other places that we can move to kind of escape some of the worst policies being implemented. But that remains to be seen. There's also like potential downsides of living in places like Thailand or elsewhere. I mean, for example, I've got friends in Taiwan living very relaxed lives. I don't think like Taiwan ever did any serious kind of lockdowns. I mean, freedom still is existing in certain places. And I think people in the UK and elsewhere in Europe probably need to recognize that fact as well. But yeah, I mean, like, just to round up, like, to summarize, in the Bitcoin context, it's very concerning because basically anything is possible. Any kind of policies that you can imagine could get implemented and be directed towards individual investors and also Bitcoin industry companies too.
Have you read this Twitter thread of Jake Chervinsky, you know, this lawyer who does really some outstanding, you know, analysis of the legal or regulatory situation beginning in the United States? Did you read that? I mean, what's your perspective on the regulatory?
So I did read Chervinsky's, it's the first time I've heard of him, actually. His thread kind of blew up. So, I mean, I'm following him now, but it was a really good thread. I think it's good to kind of tie a lot of these dots together. There are a lot of kind of actions being taken against Bitcoin companies and individual investors. I think like his tweet thread didn't even cover everything that's out there. So like recently, for example, you've got Russia demanding to see, demanding all cryptocurrency investors declare their holdings to the government. Spain just in the last few days did the same. You also had the FATF, Financial Action Task Force, publish a piece about the risks of cryptocurrencies. And in there, they were talking about things that would be red flags. And included in those red flags are using a hardware wallet, which is essentially them saying that self-custody, or at least secure self-custody, is a red flag to them. There are a few other things. Europol, we're also prioritizing privacy wallets. So Europol are now going to be targeting Bitcoin privacy wallets as a priority. So like, it seems that there's definitely a lot of action being taken around the world. I think I would lean towards the idea that it's not coordinated yet. I think all the various different countries and authorities are coming around to the fact that Bitcoin is not going away. It dumped to 3K and now it's back up at 10, 11K. There's a number of like very high profile companies investing in it. I think they're realizing that like this thing's here to stay and they need to start taking action. And I don't think the way they're going about that is stupid. Like, as a Bitcoiner, I think ultimately their efforts will fail and they don't make sense in the kind of, now that this Bitcoin genie is out of the bottle, like what they're trying will not work, but like they can do a lot of damage in the meantime. Like there's a lot of individuals that they can target with their policies, which will hurt people. But anyway, they are working about it smart. They're not just going in and banning Bitcoin immediately and saying like, nobody can hold Bitcoin. They're taking a gradualist approach, and one, for example, demanding that people declare their cryptocurrency holdings. Now, like that, to a lot of people, may not strike them as particularly concerning. It's like, okay, I've still got my Bitcoin, I've still got my cryptocurrencies. Like the government knows that I haven't, but I still haven't. Like they might tax me later or something. Like it's not a big problem. But once they know everything about your cryptocurrency holdings, they put you in a very vulnerable position because they can start making demands that are very, very difficult to refuse. And like, as everybody knows, Bitcoin privacy is pretty terrible on-chain. So once they have all of your UTXOs, for instance, it would be very difficult to do anything with your Bitcoin if like the government turns tyrannical, for instance. So, and then another thing, another trend that Chervinsky pointed out was this kind of attack on custody. And that again is pretty smart. Like that's the way you should go about it. Like if you eliminate Bitcoiners' ability to self-custody, like all of a sudden they're completely in your hands and you can do whatever you want with them. You can implement whatever kind of crazy tax policies or censorship that you want. So like, but they can do it in such a way where they don't like kind of trigger any alarm bells, or like it doesn't look particularly unethical or immoral. They're like, we're not taking anybody's Bitcoin. We're just asking for addresses. What's wrong with that? And later they'll be like, okay, we're just demanding people put them into licensed custodians. Like everybody has to hold their Bitcoin in a licensed custodian. What's wrong with that? They've still got their Bitcoin. They're still theirs. And then it's just like a progression where they kind of slowly erode Bitcoin's sovereignty and their wealth and stuff like that. So I think everybody needs to pay attention to the developments, and they're not going to happen the same all around the world. People either need to stay at home and like drive policy changes, which I think is very difficult considering the opponent they're up against. Start moving to alternative jurisdictions where they're going to be treated a bit more fairly. But like we've seen with the Corona thing, like if you're in Europe and you want to move to another European country, the options for places that are not going to get too tyrannical are getting pretty slim. Like the number of places that you can escape to are diminishing pretty quickly. Even like Switzerland is now demanding that people inform the government if they're going to have a dinner party. Like if there was anywhere in Europe that you would hope that would be a little bit more kind of freedom focused and like protecting people's liberties, it would be Switzerland, but even that kind of dream is dead. So I think like just all of us need to pay attention to how things are unfolding.
Excellent. One of the points that Jake Czerwinski did is he pointed out to sort of his conclusion was that there would be literally like tainted coins, tainted Bitcoins and clean Bitcoins. Like, you know, let's talk about like a, you know, KYC exchange, a normal KYC exchange, like whatever, like Kraken. And so if you withdraw your Bitcoin from there to, let's say, one of these privacy wallets, you know, let's say, you know, Samurai wallet, and you start coin mixing, whatever, Wasabi, would that be like that considered tainted, criminal, or?
I think like things like that will be increasingly difficult to, will be very difficult to enforce. I think like aiming for just forcing people to custody everything, it would probably be a more efficient strategy. But I mean, yeah, they're going to also try to attack Bitcoin's fungibility, and they will ensure that any kind of licensed, or it's likely that certain governments will ensure that like licensed businesses won't be able to accept coins that like tick certain red flags. And like having worked in cross-border payments for quite a long time, and then also like, you know, KCoin with an exchange, you kind of come into contact with a lot of these regulations, and like compliance is a massive headache because you're basically deputized by the government to become an enforcer. You become one of their agents in terms of like enforcing whatever crazy policies that they decide, and it gets in the way of doing business. It's also a lot of hassle, but also there's kind of like moral and ethical implications there, because you may be kind of enforcing things that, or it's very likely that you're enforcing things that like restrict people from using the financial system. So like if somebody comes from a specific country, regardless of their background, regardless of their history, like how good a person they are, maybe they're now living in another country. If they come from like a certain country, immediate like red flag, they can't use your cross-border payment service. And it's like what you're doing there as a fintech company is like perpetuating these kind of exclusionary systems. It's a big problem.
So do you think this is, it has become a little bit easier to purchase Bitcoin, you know, from the so-called decentralized, I mean, they are decentralized, BISC, you know, such as BISC exchange. Do you see that trend? Like, do you see the development like in a certain direction where people are more enticed, motivated to go on, even though maybe it's not that much convenient or maybe not that user friendly. What about those people that that at least try to get their Bitcoin outside the KYC platforms?
Yeah, so first thing is that people that do those kind of things are exposing themselves to different types of risks. So if you do everything legally through the existing system, withdraw to your own wallet and declare your assets and pay your taxes and stuff like that, like you are safe from certain threats, but there are risks that come further down the line. If Bitcoin becomes more disruptive, there could be some extreme insane policies that we can't imagine, for like the corona lockdowns, that could be targeted at you. So like that's a risk that the BISC users are avoiding, but then they now have a new risk that, like, if governments in their chosen jurisdiction ever find out that they're like not complying, or they're using kind of illegal services, then that could cause them some problems down the line as well. So like people just have to kind of work out what they think the most possible future outcomes are and start preparing for that. Like I feel like there's some kind of cosmic justice involved here. Like Bitcoin is almost too good to be true. Like you just buy it, you hold it, and then you get rich over time, very quickly, like over a few decades, if like the price trend continues, right? And a lot of people have been made very rich over the past 10 years, but like it can't be that easy. Like if people are getting wealthy and enjoying the benefits of Bitcoin that quickly, there needs to be some kind of downside to it. And I think the downsides we're going to start to see over the next few years. It'll happen probably very quickly, especially if the Bitcoin price starts to increase. So for example, in China, I kind of witnessed it firsthand in the 2017 bubble. China started implementing all sorts of policies and escalating. So first it was like kind of all the Bitcoin exchanges had to implement KYC and AML, and then they shut all the exchanges down for a few weeks, and then they were back up, and then they completely shut the whole thing down. There was all these confusing messages coming out from the central government. And that was happening while the Bitcoin price was rising. So I think if we're going to start seeing kind of the next level of policies being implemented across Europe and the US and elsewhere, then it'll probably happen during a Bitcoin rally. And if we're getting into price predictions, so yeah, I would expect that one major move by at least one major government in the West will probably trigger the next bubble popping. Like I think Bitcoin kind of price action that happens in cycles in every 4 years. And I think we'll probably in the next couple of years see a big rally. And that will probably get popped by some regulation somewhere.
Do you see like a development where, you know, I mean, you work at Blockstream and as far as I know, you know, Blockstream is also in the delivery phase of these satellite kits. You know, what I'm trying to ask is that, do you think that the privacy issues can be resolved with internet independent Bitcoin transactions and off the grid transactions? So in the course of that, you know, when we have a critical adoption rate and maybe even circular economies more and more, and you know, we had been talking also yesterday off the record about MicroStrategy and other institutions now buying vast sums of Bitcoin. And you don't, I mean, you told me that you don't see that positively, I mean, or optimistically as others do, that it would sort of, you know, create a hyper Bitcoinization, not a hyper Bitcoinization, but you know what I mean, like a process where these institutions would have a positive impact on the legislative process or on politicians for Bitcoin's adoption.
Yeah. So I think there's two questions there. One is about like how Blockstream Satellite helps in kind of attack scenarios for Bitcoin. And then the second question is about how There's this idea going around that the more powerful people and companies invest in Bitcoin, the more resilient it will be against any kind of unexpected extreme government actions, because you'll have like government officials invested and like powerful companies influencing politicians to stave off the worst. So I'll answer those in reverse order because that probably makes more sense. So I am optimistic about MicroStrategy and I can't remember the name of the other company that just invested, or at least declared their investment recently. Having people acknowledge Bitcoin's kind of sound money properties, its store of value properties, is good. People acknowledging the weakness of fiat and converting it into Bitcoin is good. These are all great trends. And like what I'm talking about, or what we're talking about today, is kind of the more kind of paranoid edge case angle, I think. Like, if this trend continues, it's definitely good. We've got more people on board. Great. But like, it's not all kind of sun and rainbows. Like, the companies like MicroStrategy and other kind of financial organizations are extremely compliant. Like, they're ridiculously compliant. I think they're probably using custodians to store their Bitcoins. So like, if there are any kind of actions taken against Bitcoin, custodians will be the first ones to get targeted. And so they'll get carried along with that. But then also, like, if MicroStrategy or another company receives orders that like they have to liquidate their Bitcoin holdings or pay a gigantic tax or whatever, they just absolutely have to comply. Like, and as we've seen, like, I keep on bringing it back to the Corona lockdowns, like, the kind of policies that will be demanded of people and companies are completely unexpected. Like, these lockdowns are also hurting very large organizations as well as small businesses and individuals. And like, these large organizations also have influence over policy and can't like hold them off. So yeah, I think like we have to bear in mind that these very large organizations are less sovereign and have less resistance when it comes to anything that starts coming down the line. Also, there may be benefits for them in complying to certain regulations. I mean, like, it's not going to be all stick, maybe like carrots. Like, if they like choose to comply with certain regulations, they may be allowed to kind of continue holding it and pay less taxes, or like, they could be co-opted into this new system with like a kind of a fractional reserve Bitcoin, for instance, where they see some of the benefits of that. So like, it's very difficult to kind of predict how that will unfold. And then like, the other question is, how does Satellite help with this? I mean, Satellite primarily is more designed for creating redundant connections for running your Bitcoin node. So if you if you're worried about your internet connection dying on you at any point, you would use Blockstream Satellite, and that would provide you a second connection, which would allow you to maintain your node. And then also, it's for places that don't have any internet. So you can also run a Bitcoin node in these kind of remote locations. But another kind of key benefit, which is perhaps less lower priority than that, but still exists, is the fact that you can run a Bitcoin node privately. And I think one very obvious strategy that may be employed in and like, I don't think I'm kind of breaking any kind of tips here, but like, would be to start demanding licenses for Bitcoin node holders, Bitcoin node operators, for instance. And if that happens, like, it'd be very dangerous for people to run a Bitcoin node. They tend to have quite a large footprint on a broadband connection. So it would be quite easy for internet service providers to identify who's running Bitcoin nodes. So in that kind of scenario, like, running a Blockstream Satellite node is a really good way of getting around that, because nobody knows that you're receiving the Bitcoin blockchain. Like, you've got your satellite up and you're receiving it totally passively. There's no kind of like signals being transferred on the internet that like declares that you're using this technology. You right. Could have like 100 people in a smaller
Exactly, like okay. circumventing all these restrictions, surveillance, censorship in all these countries. You know, we've been talking also with Randy Brito of Lodge & Mesh and Richard Myers of Global Mesh Labs. That's the whole purpose, right? Like in countries like Venezuela, Turkey, Iran, you know, would it be countries with hyperinflation, surveillance, or sanctions? You know, so that's the whole point, you know, to circumvent these kind of inhuman restrictions or censorship, surveillance, or...
Yeah, I wouldn't say that was the whole point of Blockstream Satellite. there are limits to how far it can be pushed as well. But certainly in those kind of scenarios, if, for instance, a very large country totally blocked and banned Bitcoin connections, it would be possible to still operate a Bitcoin node in a kind of disaster scenario using a Blockstream Satellite node. So yeah, it definitely helps. And then with the addition of LocoMesh and GoTenor and various other, like for example, Ham Radio, you can really start to construct an alternative network that doesn't rely on any internet whatsoever.
Yeah, especially with radio. Yeah, that's what I understood from the talks with Richard Myers and Randy Brito and also Alessandro Cesare in Venezuela. Very fascinating projects that are going on. So Neil, I mean, where do you, do you think we are at the juncture, like, you know, macroeconomically, geopolitically, and also, you know, because I'm really concerned, to be honest with you. When I look at the development right now and things are going so fast and so simultaneously that I'm like, are we at the juncture? Are we going into, you know, total surveillance and communist-like regimes all controlled by the central banks, or we're going, you know, really into more and more towards freedom and censorship resistance and hardest and scarcest money, you know, what is it that you see on the horizon? I mean, or where are we from your perspective?
I think for a lot of countries, places like the UK, it's very obvious that Corona will be used to implement even further kind of scary policies. Like I've got a list of predictions that I put out in March on Twitter. And like half of them have already come true and the other half are pending, but probably already being discussed. Yes, I think like in the short term, I'm very pessimistic. I think governments are getting too big, but then also kind of there is a lot of popular support for governments getting bigger. Everybody's kind of own pet problem. They're kind of expecting the government to fix that. And that's great news for the government because it means everybody wants them to expand. So I think like it's a problem both. I mean, the government is taking far too many liberties away, but then also there's a kind of a general problem with Western populations where they've got like kind of lazy and their ideology is pretty weak and they're quite happily giving them away and in many instances demanding that they give them away. So yeah, I think like if you are kind of liberty-minded Bitcoiner, you need to be prepared for things to get worse in the short term and start preparing for how to make things better. Like I think Bitcoin definitely, I mean, people always talk about Bitcoin fixes this, right? And like, and then you've got a number of people that kind of rail against that and like these problems are complex and Bitcoin can't fix like all sorts of political problems. I think the main meme of Bitcoin fixes this is that it creates the conditions, it creates the environment in which these problems can get fixed. Until we fix the money, like the banks and the central governments have way too much power. Like they literally can just throw money at people to make them do things. And if they are more constrained by Bitcoin, then it makes things more difficult for them. And that kind of puts the wedge in that allows kind of the more liberty focused people to start kind of leveraging that and trying to make a more reasonable future. I think like there's a lot of other good technological things happening outside of Bitcoin in terms of like private communications, which like based on the very recent Twitter news is it's becoming very clear that that's probably going to be necessary. Until now, we haven't seen ISPs get in the game, but they seem to be like, I haven't heard it discussed yet, but they seem like the obvious next vector to start controlling the conversation. So I'm kind of expecting they'll be deputized soon. Yeah, so I mean, like, not a whole lot of kind of positive messages there. And I think, like, in terms of discussing, like, kind of potential strategies, I think it's almost a little bit dangerous to discuss them in public. Some of them are like, I mean, one, you don't want to get in trouble, and two, you don't want to give away your hand. Like, it's difficult. It's difficult. It's increasingly difficult. Yeah. I think one of the good trends that Bitcoin will hopefully lead to, and perhaps this is happening outside of Bitcoin too, but this decentralization. So like the US states, like regardless of what's happening with Bitcoin, seem to be fracturing, mainly along kind of like this polar political lines, but at least it seems like, for example, California is particularly like opposed to like somewhere like Texas or North Dakota or something like that. Like that's a good trend. And then also in Europe, we're seeing Brexit and then other kind of EU separation movements happening over there. And smaller states aren't necessarily safer states, but at least, I mean, it's a bit like the Bitcoin thing, right? It creates better conditions for realizing freedom. So that I think is also something like, that's a positive to be taken from the way things are going.
Yeah, I understand your approach or your position. Bitcoin definitely creates the conditions, as you said, the environmental conditions, the monetary conditions, the structural conditions to, finally make this process evolve, into a more liberating, freedom-seeking and rational world. Besides, educating people, that's what we do, whether it's podcasts, books, articles, there's like tons of, so even on Twitter, it's the social media itself, it's educational tool. But do you see like the pain point already, even the fragmented, like reaching a point, whether it's in Western world, in Europe or other places, where, there's a wake up call for people,
I think like people get a bit dejected that everybody's so apathetic right now, and they kind of like, oh, everybody's just going to comply and like the world is doomed. But I think when you start to see kind of people's livelihoods and wealth getting targeted, you will see ideological shifts. Like when it's not in kind of people's interest, people will start to change the way they think, and like whatever kind of zeitgeist is right now, it will change in the future. And it's a bit like people are like, oh, everybody just wants to store Bitcoin with a custodian. They don't want to, like, I mean, Peter McCormack talking about people don't want to know what an XPUB is. Like, there are certain things that can take place that will make people very interested in having self-custody and very interested in learning what an XPUB is.
Out of necessity, of course, right? Out of necessity.
Exactly, out of necessity. Like, if certain policies are put in place, like, you will see people like having motivation to go learn. So I think like it's really important that Bitcoin exists, one, so like gives people that exit, that option to like go and learn about. But then also, in addition to like, I mean, you mentioned education, that's great. Like, there always can be more resources that can be refined and stuff like that. But then also, I think there needs to be more products, like more products and more companies. The more Bitcoin technology out there, the more resilient the entire system is, the more useful Bitcoin will be to people. I think like at the moment, there's not a whole lot of companies in the Bitcoin space.
That's true. Yeah. Lot
of people building stuff. Outside of education, I think it's really important that people don't just like, oh, I can't do anything. Like, I'll just educate people on Bitcoin. Like, education is important, but then also like people should be trying to find ways of building Bitcoin things, like Bitcoin aligned things as well.
Yeah. I mean, the product development, I mean, I have seen some ramp up in the product development, at least, as a testing tool or beta phase or at least in the developmental stage, whether it's you know, a Spectre, Umbrel, or even from Unchain Capital. So there are some products, some services already offered, which I think is great, but I still think there is a huge potential with its, you know, user experience, user interface, a practical, you know, experience by the users, through the user. So where do you see this going? I mean, do you see like huge niches opening up for people, average person, Joe and Mary on the street who can finally, you know, start using it, start self-custodying themselves without, you know, being paranoid about the security, the privacy?
I don't know. I think we're almost there already, and we have been for a few years. Like, I mean, people complain about the complexity of Bitcoin, but for example, Trezor just has a fantastic UI. I mean, it's not particularly private, but like for grandmothers and stuff like that, it's usable as it is. Like they will have to sit down and work it out. But I mean, for example, if you're going to purchase a house, whether in the US, UK or whatever, like that is a very difficult process. People motivated because they want houses. They're motivated to go and learn about all of it, like getting the loan out and dealing with all the legal hassle that surrounds it. Like people work that out, and it, by comparison, setting up a Trezor, for instance, is much, much more simple. And I think the more people realize the need for holding Bitcoin to put their savings in, like the more people will start adopting it, no problem. But then again, like I think Spectre is particularly good because it kind of makes using a Bitcoin full node more.
It's become more easier. Important, you know, this privacy and the, you know, not leaking out any kind of information. So it's this kind of thing that needs to be really people need to be educated about. And I mean, it's Trezor is great, but it's just, you know, it's a jumping into the pool for the first time, that's great. But once you know the details, the devil, you know, is in the details. So
there's also a thing that'll happen, like these projects. I mean, Spectre seems to be like going great, a lot of attention. So like they're probably just going to be successful in their own right. But there are probably other smaller projects that don't get a whole lot of attention, but are also really cool. That kind of lay the foundation for better projects once there's more incentive to use them. So like, I think increasingly in Bitcoin, we're going to see a split between and the black market and the white market. Like whether you think like in your chosen jurisdiction, like Bitcoin policy is going to develop positively or negatively, there are going to be places where it develops negatively. And that will create demand for black market kind of or products that facilitate black market usage. And if there's demand, like people will find ways to market that. And so I think when that happens, you'll see some of these kind of projects really kind of kick into gear and develop very quickly to meet
that need. Right.
So, the more preparation we can do now, the better.
Definitely. I agree with you. It's just, whatever one thinks about the status of the legitimacy of a nation state government, regulators, central banks, whatever. I always say that's the whole point of Bitcoin is whoever was or whatever Satoshi Nakamoto was, is that, you know, to take away this or as Hayek, you know, Hayek, the great Austrian economist who died already, but he said that that's the only sly roundabout, he had been hoping or wishing for a sly roundabout, and that's what we have. That's Bitcoin, to take away that thing which is money out of the hands of governments, and I think that Bitcoin is the black market money for the totality of humanity. And what do you think about this statement of mine?
Some people just don't want to break the law, and I think they're always going to be around. So, and I think Bitcoin is still useful to them. So, I think things are going to get hardest during the transition period, like when we see fiat fail. There'll be a lot of popular support for nasty policies, and the powers that rely on fiat currencies now will probably get pretty nasty too. But after the transition, like, I think we could probably start to see things mend and improve. And at that point, like, the black market will shrink and the white market will start to become the kind of the dominant set of industries. And in that case, I think Bitcoin, again, is still extremely important and valuable. And at that point, it will be particularly white market. But I think people need to be prepared that, like, in some places, Bitcoin will be necessary as a kind of black market facilitator. And the black market will save lives. Like, people won't be able to eat, for instance, without purchasing their food on the black market. So, I wouldn't want to classify Bitcoin as a black market tool. I don't think that's particularly good framing either, for, like, that probably encourages worse action against it. But yes, like, if we're going to accept reality, it will be used in black market purchases. And also, like, there's going to be a wide range of markets between white market and black market, like there is today. And Bitcoin will also be very useful within those.
I want to respect your time, Neil, and before we wrap up, since we're working with other Bitcoiners on different projects now, Bitcoin commercials, trailers, teasers, and also a total film production, a documentary, Humanity Rooted in Bitcoin is the working title. Do you think we're going into this phase where there'll be more, such as projects or organizations such as Seasetting Institute, Ocean Builders, Free Private Cities? I mean, I had some beautiful talk with Jeff Booth and Titus Gebel of Free Private Cities. Jeff Booth, the author of The Price of Tomorrow, Why Deflation is the Key to an Abundant Future. I don't know whether you've read it. Have you read it?
I've been really bad with books this year. A very long reading list. I've seen a lot of people recommending it, though.
Yeah, you should definitely, whenever you have some free time, just read it. It's really an eye-opener. I mean, it was for a lot of people, also for myself. Do you think there'll be more like breakaway societies, breakaway civilizations, free private cities, where we have, deflationary economies, deflationary technologies, entrepreneurs, investors, geniuses coming together, people, citizens coming together and all over the world and creating their own, free private cities where Bitcoin embedded, rooted within that, the core structure. Do you see this coming, or do you see this evolving more and more?
I think that one's beyond my expertise. I think,
wouldn't that be like a viable solution for, getting out of
this? It'd be nice. Madness? It'd be nice, but I would also be worried and skeptical about getting into kind of brand new built dedicated cities from kind of crackpot libertarians. Like, there would be no precedent for that country, that region, that society, that culture for succeeding. And there's a few options right now, right? You got the Free State Project, and I just saw one recently in Europe somewhere near Kosovo, I think it was. Mm-hmm. There are already kind of options like that, but I don't know. I think kind of decentralization of existing states is probably a better trend, and within those kind of new kind of entities, hopefully kind of more ethical, more freedom focused politicians will start getting the power, and maybe like with the kind of the tools with their kind of tools of tyranny restricted, then hopefully, like, even if they want to do bad things, it'll become very, very difficult to do that. I can't say whether we'll see lots of like free cities. Hopefully we'll see increasing decentralization, UK breaking off from the EU, gotcha. UK fracturing into multiple countries, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, the idea was behind, this whole idea was the services that governments should be bringing could be delivered, much more efficiently, cheaper, and better in such a, you know, let's say confined space or free private cities, and we would have, you know, a deflationary economies and rational sound money. I think the average life of a person, of a citizen of such a private free private cities could really profit out of that, you know.
Yeah, sounds good. And if the rest of the world is getting pretty dangerous, then they could be great places to escape to.
Okay, good.
Hopefully we see something like that.
All right. Well, Neil, it was really a pleasure to talk to you. It was always enlightening. Can you tell my listeners where they can find you, or is there anything on the horizon that you, anything you want to share?
You can find me on Twitter, where I post various rants, at NWoodFine. And that's about it for now.
All right. Neil, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks very much, Kevin. Catch you later.
Hey, what you guys think about this episode? I really enjoy talking to Neil Woodfine every time. He's got, you know, great grounded perspectives, not too pessimistic, not too optimistic, but you know, he's got a realistic approach. So that's what I love about him. And let me know your questions. Don't forget to subscribe to my YouTube channel, to my podcast platforms. If you really liked this episode, please leave a 5-star rating, a review on, you know, on any podcast platform, iTunes, Apple, what have you. So if you have any special, you know, wish for special content, special guest, let me know. But please don't forget to subscribe to my YouTube channel, to my podcast platform, follow me and Neil Woodfine also on Twitter. Gonna put those in the show notes. So been Bitcoin fixes this and that, but we have still a lot of work to do, not only educational wise, but you know, creating the infrastructures, creating more user-friendly products, services, and the pain point, you know, has also not been reached yet, especially in the Western world, whether it be, you know, Europe or any other, you know, Western country or continent. So we have a lot, you know, work to do, but we can, you know, if you share this video, if you share, you know, other educational materials to your friends, neighbors, colleagues, family members, just, you know, give them the information, and it will, you know, it needs some time to digest, but eventually we'll get there, because right now, I mean, as I see it, we're either going, you know, totally into centralized, super surveilled, totalitarian, you know, fascist, communist-like regimes, controlled and steered by central banks and governments, or we're going really towards freedom and innovation and, total innovation, abundance, prosperity. So let me know your, you know, if you have any wishes for any special content or guests. And thanks so much for your support and for listening. I'll talk to you soon again.